Doctor, then I asked how about the period of time you couldn't account for. Did you remember any of that? Did Mr. Hoffman point it out? You remembered that. Then I asked you what happened. And you said something about going around the corner on a side road. And the men in the road. Do you remember that? BTTY, yes. Doctor, then after that, you said you could remember being asleep. And walking in the woods and going on a ship. What about this sleep? You had never mentioned about being asleep. Betty, well, I seem to remember that when the men who were in the road came up to the side of the car, I went to sleep. Doctor, when they came up to the side of the car, you went to sleep. Betty, yes. Doctor, yes, and then what? 250, BTTY, and then I don't know what happened during this period of time. But it seems as though I was asleep and that I was really forcing myself to wake up. Doctor, I see. Now is it possible that you actually had fallen asleep while Barney was in the road? Betty, no. No, I don't think so. Doctor, well, under what circumstances would you be asleep then? Betty, well, in thinking about this, I would assume that they did something that would make me not conscious of what was going on. Doctor, but you never mentioned at any time before, either in or out of hypnosis, anything about being asleep. You don't think it's possible that while you were in the car, you were tired enough so that you might have fallen asleep? Betty, no, I didn't fall asleep in the car. Number Doctor, then it was a feeling that you were asleep, rather than any knowledge of it, is that it? Betty, yes. Doctor, that you must have been asleep? Betty, yes. Doctor, well, how could that be? You mean that the men had put you to sleep and then taken you through all this procedure? 251, Betty, they must have. Because when I saw them coming toward the car, my impulse was to open the car door and to get out and to run and hide in the woods to get away from them. Doctor, but, you didn't. Betty, number Doctor, and everything that followed after that you think might have been after you were put to sleep? Betty, yes, dot, Doctor, is that right? Betty nods. You want to talk about before I get into the more general discussion with both you and Barney, why? Betty, do you remember anything else now? Anything that you feel, there is one thing that puzzles me. Doctor, what is that? Betty, shapened after all this was all over, and we were on th or me. One suppose this has nothing to do with anything, but after all, this had happened. We were driven home, we were looking for our some pilaki that was open, so we could seconds people and get a cup of coffee. And we drove, we were driving along, and we saw dinner. The air lights were on in the interior, and we assumed it was open. So we drove into the yard and found that it was closed. And I always felt that if I could find this diner, it might be a clue to what actually happened. Doctor, yes. 2S2, Betty, and I still haven't been able to find that diner. Doctor, so there is a possibility later on that you might locate it, is that right? Betty, yes. I'm still looking for it. She laughs. Doctor, all right. I think I'll talk to Barney for just a minute, then I think I'll talk to you together about the overall picture and what we might plan to do. Betty, all right. The doctor dismisses Betty and summons Barney to the office. Doctor, to Barney. Anything special that you should like to discuss? Barney, he gives the doctor a sketch of what he recalls to be the abduction area. This is something that I drew. I don't know if it makes much sense, but this is the way the road looked. The arrow points up in the corner there. At the top is the direction this so-called moon had taken off. Doctor, when did you draw this? Barney, when I returned home last Saturday. Doctor, good. I'll keep this. Now, in my talk with Betty last time, she said something about she could remember the men in the road, walking in there, 253. Woods, and going on a ship and something about being asleep. Did you have any feeling of being asleep at any time? Barney, of being asleep? No, I did not. Or is this under hypnosis, or what? Doctor, it doesn't matter which way. Barney, well, prior to hypnosis, I had no knowledge at all about this missing period. Doctor, no, I mean as part of your experience there, you had no feeling of being asleep, or of being put to sleep, or of anything like that. Barney, no. I have no recall of that. Doctor, you were just dazed, think it. Well, think now we want to talk to the two of you together a bit and see where we go from there. Barney, very good. Betty is called back into the office to join Barney and the doctor. Doctor, to both Barney and Betty. I think we've gone far enough in the situation now, and while we haven't got every point clarified nor every detail clarified, it would take a pretty good deal of extensive repetition to do it. But much might come out if we proceed now on the general plan LHRVIN mind. I want to go over everything in great detail. And of course I want to keep you from having any unnecessary amount of anxiety. What I'd like to do is to get THs into consciousness and discuss it freely. Now there are two things involved. I mean each of you have had a common experience, and you have had separate experiences. L can take you each individually, and then together, or just take you two together. How do you feel about it? 2. 4. Barney, I think that we can work together, don't you, Betty? Betty agrees. Doctor, so you can get a complete sharing of this thing and see it from each other's side. All right. Number 2, I can talk about it, and give you the experiences. Or we can take a certain amount of risk in terms of your anxiety by going over all this together and playing it back. Barney, yes. Betty, playing it back? Doctor, yes. Betty, emphatically. Play it back. Doctor, there is quite a bit of it, and it's going to need quite a few sessions. But, I think it's probably the better way, and I think that I would rather not discuss the realities and fantasies until you've really gotten all the material that I have, of which you are unconsciously aware but consciously are not. Now, do you want to do it that way? Barney, I think that would be good. Doctor, and at any time, let's discuss. You are willing that we play back the tapes involving each of you together? Barney and Betty both agree. All right. Then we'll do that. Now if this thing gets hard to bear and some of it isn't going to be easy to take, want to know it? Let me know right away, and I can always help ease you. 255, Barney, right. Doctor, what we had better do is listen and then at the end of say 10 or 15 minutes, or whatever we want for discussion, we'll stop for a moment. If you feel we should have more discussion, we'll be able to stop the tape and talk freely at any time while playing this. Is that satisfactory? Barney and Betty both agree again. Dr. Simon pushed the button of the recorder, and the first session, the tape containing Barney's recall of the trip through Montreal and down through New Hampshire, began. When the tapes started, a strange thing happened. In his general reinforcement of the hypnosis with the Hills, the doctor had taken the precaution to make sure that no other person than he could put them into hypnosis by using the cue words. When Barney's tape began, the induction procedure was the first material that came out over the speaker. Barney, glancing in Betty's direction, was startled to see her sink back in her chair. As Barney was finishing the discussion with Dr. Simon, he hadn't listened to the first part of the tape, Betty had. She remembers going under, while she was still aware of what was happening. She tried to stamp her foot to alert Barney and the doctor that she was slipping into a trance, but she couldn't move it. After waking Betty, Dr. Simon reinforced both so they would not respond to any cue words unless he gave them face to face. They continued. When I first began hearing my voice under hypnosis, Barney later describes it, I was lifted out of my seat. I couldn't believe it. I knew it was my voice, but it was difficult for me to really understand that this was me, saying that this has actually happened. LT was as if I had been asleep and had talked in my sleep. I just couldn't believe it. I wasn't too concerned about the first part of the tapes less than numbing down through Canada, and the first part of our leg through Upper New Hampshire. I had remembered practically all this detail consciously. But as the tapes moved along toward Indian Head, I didn't know what was going to happen. I could feel my ulcer. I mean, I could feel my stomach churning, my muscles tighten. I just didn't know what to expect. I know I sat on the edge of my chair, shifting my position frequently. 2.56, the tone of my voice was interesting, because it didn't sound a bit like me. And also, the way I slurred my words. Betty's reaction was similar. I thought he sounded as though he were asleep. But then, I began to get scared. I said to myself, "Oh, good Lord, I'd just as soon go home and not hear them." And then I began to wonder. Everything was building up to the part that I had heard all the way out in the waiting room, when I heard Barney's outcries. I was anticipating that and wondering what my reaction would be. Slowly, the tape approached the portion involving Indian Head. I knew I was getting to the point in which I had no complete memory. Barney continues in describing his reaction at a later date. I felt quite securely being with the doctor in his office, and I had complete confidence in him. I knew that, if the going got too rough, he could take me out of it. Then I was suddenly startled. When I put the binoculars up to my eyes, I couldn't believe I had reacted that way. And the eyes. The eyes that seemed to come toward me. Then I heard myself saying that the eyes seemed to be burning into my senses, like an indelible imprint. And I began, in the doctor's offices, to feel the pieces unfolding. I was beginning to remember. Suddenly the lost pieces began coming together. Even while listening to the tapes, I felt this. I suddenly realized how I had broken my binocular straps. And I remembered that for days after Indian Head, I had an intense soreness in the back of my neck. Listening to the tapes, this came back to me sharply, the violent thrust of my arms breaking the binocular strap. All of this was unfolding not just on the tapes, but beginning to unfold in my mind, my conscious mind. I did not feel too much shock there in the doctor's office, perhaps because he had fortified me by post-hypnotic suggestion that I would be able to tolerate this in relative comfort. But I noticed that Dr. Simon kept watching us very closely as he was playing the tapes. He was apparently conscious of any pressure being built up in us. And he would stop the machine, and talk with us several times. Every once in a while, I would look over at Betty. And she has a way of looking at me and being reassuring. It's sort of a look that she can give, almost to say, "I'm in love with you, Barney." And I felt this reassurance. And it helped. I think you can say the best description was that I was numb, as I listened. Information was flooding back into my mind, but my emotions were numb. I continued to feel that if it became too distressing, the doctor would be able to control it. 257. And then, as the tapes went deeper and deeper into the part one had never remembered, there was the feeling as if heavy chains were lifted off my shoulders. I felt that I need no longer suffer the anxieties of wondering what happened. I felt mainly that I was actually reliving the experience. It was a bright, clear morning as we listened to the tapes. The sun was filling the doctor's office, but as the tape was played, it was as if a pall had descended, and I was sitting there out on that mountain road at night. I could actually see what I described as the Cheshire Cat. This growing, one beam eye, staring at me, or rather not staring at me, but being a part of me. I could turn my eyes, and I did while sitting in the doctor's office the listening. I blinked my eyes and shut the lids as if to get this from my mind. I was certain now, on listening to the tapes, that I had never really understood before. Suddenly, lo and behold, I could actually describe things beyond Indian Head. There are many emotions and reactions that occur within a fleeting second, so that I was running a gamut of these emotions and reactions. And I think this is why it never became too distressing for me to listen to the tapes. I could hardly wait to talk to Betty alone about it. I wanted to tell her my thoughts, my feelings. To tell her that this was just too much to digest at one time. I had to observe and study this more. It would take time to get used to it, listening to that person who was representing me on the tapes. I kept saying to myself, Is that me on the tapes saying this? And then the word incredible kept coming up in my mind. It was just incredible, completely unbelievable that this was me. And I think I really felt in two minds about it. Maybe one reason L wanted to talk to Betty in the car was that it camouflaged my real meaning. Wanted to be rid of listening to the tapes so that I could quickly go back and join my full conscious mind, and forget it. At the part of the tapes where my voice said that I was just floating about, I then knew that I wasn't really floating about. I was being half dragged to the ship. I could actually feel the suspension rather of being suspended with the arms holding me. And what was so curious is that I could feel the pressure of the arms. When I talk about this, I feel chills about the whole thing. The pressure of the arms, of these small men holding me and dragging me along. And then I thought of my shoes, the tops of them being scraped, literally scraped, that I noticed the day after in Diane Head. How else would the tops of the shoes be scraped? And I was able to realize that, 2.58, these men made me forget what happened. They told me to. They told me to forget, and I wanted to forget. And I think this is why it wasn't too difficult for me to put this whole thing out of my mind for so long. I knew, I felt, I was almost sure as I listened to the tapes that this was no fantasy or dream. It was a matter of little doubt to me. It seemed without any doubt that this man could communicate with me, and he did. I also know that I wasn't anxious to communicate with him. I was listening to this being reassured by him that no harm was going to come to me, but I didn't accept it. I also took out a pencil and sketched from memory what the Emin might have looked like. I never had seen the sketch I drew under hypnosis at this point. They were fairly similar. And if we had heard no other session on tape beyond this, I would have had all this in my mind. I began to anticipate what was going to come out on the tapes the second session. I would have all this on my mind. I would have been highly confused as to why it was there, but it would have been there. Betty, in recalling her further reactions as they listened to the tapes for the first time, said, "When the tapes came to the part where Barney was standing there on the highway, I felt very sorry for him. I had sort of a feeling of being somewhat devastated. That why had we bothered, now that we had gone so far? What was the reason to find out about the whole thing? Let's forget hypnosis ever happened. Maybe we would have been better off just to leave things as they were. Maybe it was better," Jay used to wonder. And suddenly I became aware that all through this, I had never really stopped to think of what Barney's experiences were. His having separate experiences alone. And listening to Barney's voice made me relive the incident too. It was just like being right back out there on the highway. With frequent stops, the first tape was completed. Both Barney and Betty were somewhat stunned. In the elevator going down, they were alone for the first time, with a measurable recall of the incident now thoroughly in their minds. The first thing that Betty could say was in reference to Dr. Simon. "I certainly," Betty laughed, "hope that Dr. Simon isn't really a spaceman." And again Barney said, with the same whimsy, "Don't be ridiculous." Driving back to New Hampshire, Barney found himself rubbing their 259 back of his neck, where back in 1961 the burning sensation from the leather strap of the binoculars seemed to have inexplicably appeared and disappeared. His overall reaction to the tapes he summed up succinctly, "I felt so overwhelmed and relieved. Now parts of my life that had been missing were added to it again. Parts of my life were being put back together." Chapter 12e. In summarizing the session of the first playback of the tapes, Dr. Simon dictated, "The first interview with Mr. Hill was now played back to Mr. and Mrs. Hill together and carried to the point of the sighting and the outburst of extreme anxiety that Mr. Hill had. He showed considerable distress at this, but seemed to manage it quite well. And as it proceeded, he took out a piece of paper and began to draw. In this drawing, he sketched out, again ahead, with some very staring eyes, a worm in shape, but not slanted. At the end of this, he seemed to be very well composed and wished to be assured of its fantasy nature. Both wished to continue in this fashion, and a date was set a week from today to continue the play begun and the cue word was used, Mrs. Hill went into back of the hypnotic sessions. It is of interest when the playback was a trance. Both were then intentionally put into another trance and were told that they would not respond to the cue word when they heard it on the playback, but only when it came directly from me. During the week that followed, Barney tried to analyze the incident from the point of view that it might have been a fantasy, but so many details came flooding back as a result of hearing the recording that he found himself seriously doubting this theory. Both he and Betty were vacillating constantly, at one moment feeling that perhaps this could be a dream, at others becoming convinced of the reality of it. The playback of the recording stimulated release into the Hill's consciousness of further details, some which had not been expressed during the hypnotic sessions. This release of new material is a product of the 261 working through process in psychotherapy, either with or without hypnosis. Later, at his home in Portsmouth, Barney found himself remembering how he opened his eyes fleetingly on entering the craft. "I remember I had passed the outer door where my feet scraped against the bulkhead," he recalled some time later, "and I got a good look at the three men who were standing by the door of what would have been the room where they examined me. I saw them just as I was about to enter this, so that I could see the curved contour of the corridor just fleetingly. And I was quite upset about that, because they were talking to each other. Yet I was also being understood and was understanding someone else who was continuing to tell me that we were not going to be harmed." The interior of the craft was filled with this bluish light, and by that I mean a fluorescent kind of light, which didn't cast any shadows. The men had rather odd-shaped heads, with a large cranium, diminishing in size as it got toward the chin. And the eyes continued around to the sides of their heads, so that it appeared that they could see several degrees beyond the lateral extent of our vision. This was startling to me. And something that I remembered, after listening to the tapes, is the mouth itself. I could not describe the mouth before, and I drew the picture without including the mouth. But it was much like when you draw one horizontal line with a short perpendicular line on each end. This horizontal line would represent the lips without the muscle that we have. And it would part slightly as they made this mew mew mumming sound. The texture of the skin, as I remember it from this quick glance, was grayish, almost metallic looking. I didn't notice any hair or headgear for that matter. Also, I didn't notice any proboscis. There just seemed to be two slits that represented the nostrils. Betty and I went to hear a lecture one time by Dr. Carlton S. Kuhn of the Department of Anthropology at Harvard, and he showed a slide of a group of people who lived around the Magellan Straits. We both had quite a reaction when we saw it, because this group of Indians, who lived in an extremely cold atmosphere high in the mountains where there was little oxygen, bore a considerably close resemblance to what I'm trying to describe. And the professor was telling us how this group of people had, in the course of many generations, shown considerable physiological changes to adapt to the climate. They had oriental sort of eyes, but the eye socket gave an appearance of being much larger than what it was, because nature had developed a roll of fat around the eye 262, and also around the mouth. So it looked as if the mouth had almost no opening and as if they had practically no nose. They were quite similar, in a general way, to the men I'm trying to describe. When I was in the corridor, I was surprised that the leader didn't follow me into the room. But again the eyes seemed to follow me. It was as if I knew the leader was elsewhere, but his effectiveness was there with me. Wherever he was still able to convey messages to me, such as recognizing when I would become more fearful or needed calming down. I know how ridiculous this sounds, but it's the only way I can describe it. He was able to do this. There was another person in the room with me beside the three men at the door. And he was the one who scraped my arms and did the examining, checking my spinal column and that sort of thing. I only got a very brief glance at the room, through the door. It was very barren, and the only furniture I could see was this table. The walls were smooth and barren, just this plain bluish white color. No pictures or ornaments. The room was pie-shaped, but as if the point of the pie had been cut off. I couldn't see any windows. The ceiling and floor and walls all seemed to be made of the same material, but I didn't notice what the texture was. Also, I didn't notice where the light source was. The main thing I was impressed by was the table that I was to lie on, because it was so much shorter than anything that would ordinarily hold a human being. So that when I got on the table, my legs dangled over the end. And I thought this was peculiar. I was escorted, sort of dragged I guess, both in and out of the ship. There was a slight difference in temperature, so that I knew I was in an interior as they took me over the bulkhead or whatever it was. I didn't notice any odor particularly. And I could breathe all right inside. There wasn't any struggle for breath. And as I was escorted out, I was still being held, and I could feel the night air rush toward me. There was a difference between being inside there and outside, and I could feel it. I bumped my feet again on this bulkhead on the way out, and I could feel myself being taken down the ramp. Then I found myself walking on rough ground, and I still thought that the people who had taken me out were still with me. But I opened my eyes, and I was standing there alone. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And suddenly, I forgot what had happened completely. I had absolutely no memory of it. I thought, oh, I must have walked into the woods to take a break in the trip. That's what must have happened. I'll go to the car, and it was 263, sitting there on the road, and I walked up to it. I was curious why the motor was off, and the lights were off. I wouldn't usually do this just to jump out of the car for a rest stop. And I sat down on the front seat on top of the tire wrench. I thought, that's interesting. What's this doing here? And I pulled it from under me and placed it in the well between the door and the seat itself. Then I beard Delcie whimpering. I thought, oh, Delcie, you are under the seat. I thought Betty was taking you for a walk. I was sort of foggy, my mind was unclear. But I took Delcie out of the car after I bad started up the motor and put the headlights on. Then Betty started walking out of the woods, and I thought, well, that's what I'm doing. I'm sitting here waiting for Betty. She came down the road from an angle, as if from the woods on the other side of the road. So to me it seemed that I had obviously stopped on Betty's request. And she almost casually said, come on out, let's watch it leave. Then I thought, that's ridiculous. Watch what leave? But I thought I'd humor her, I'll get out. And then I saw the moon. I immediately thought of it as the moon, and then we both were amazed, because the moon was moving. I was sure it was the moon setting. But I was curious about it, because it just didn't seem to be a normal moon. Then everything seemed to go blank again, this fog, this haziness set in until I saw the sign, Concord 17 miles. I do remember vaguely wondering how this enormous disc, that had been very orange in color, could change so quickly to a brilliant, silvery color. During this week Betty thought often about her reaction to Barney's description on the tapes. It seemed as if I were reliving F-E-R-I-V-N-G again, she recalls. When he was out on the highway, there, just before the beeping sound, I could recall how I flew across the front scat and yelled for him to come back. A lot of other detail kept C-O-M-N-G back to me, so vividly. As the other sessions of the PL-ABAC continued, the recall of both Barney and B-T-A-C-C-E-L-R at Ed-F-L-L-M-G in more detail, with many H-L for remembered fra G-M-E-N-T-S falling into P-L-A-C-E. T-H-E-Y became more acclimated to hearing their own somnambulistic voices, but still found it hard to believe that these were their own stories. To Betty, the moment the men came up to the door of the car at the time of the roadblock, she now felt that she had gone into a hypnotic trance of the same type she experienced in the sessions in Teehee Doctor's 2M office. She felt as if both she and Barney had in some way been mesmerized by the beeping sounds to a quasi-hypnotic state, which deepened at the point where she began to open the car door to run into the woods and hide. At the moment that one of the men in the road opened the car door for her, he put his hand out, and she felt as if her consciousness was slipping away, just as she had so many times during the sessions. She noted that both she and Barney on the tapes had to struggle to remember at identical points, first at Indian Head and shortly after at the Roadblock. To Barney, the sensation was one of floating.